We're going inside them. We're going outside them. Inside them, outside them. And when they get them on a run once, we're going to keep them on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get them on a run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today, we're going to win.
It's a fake. The throw to Domingue. He bobbles it, and then it hits to the end zone. Touchdown.
Let's just go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. 4th and 5. The national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner.
Welcome, fun lovers. We are live in the Cups Corner Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bobby Berger, former Notre Dame football player, now college football aficionado. Our goal, as always, is to be the premier college football podcast. If you're wondering how I'm doing, I know the following three songs by heart. Let me tell you what those three songs are. One, For the First Time in Forever. Two, Do You Want to Build a Snowman? And three, Let It Go. For those of you who have a little daughter or granddaughter, you know exactly where I'm going with this. For those who don't, these are three very popular songs from the movie Frozen. So my little girl is obsessed with Frozen. It's cute. I'm not going to lie. But here's the catch. When Dad's requested to put these songs on in the car when we're driving, Dad is not allowed to sing. He is reminded, Dad, you are not allowed to sing. That kind of hurts a little bit, not going to lie, but I've never been one to be called on stage to sing karaoke. I'll say that too. So maybe it's better that I say Dad knows how to hum all of the Frozen songs. Anyways, let's get down to business here. Let's start with our trivia question. The website teamrankings.com, I know a lot of you guys use this one, has a stat called opponent plays per game. It is only calculated when FBS opponents play FBS opponents. So no FCS games here. I want you guys to tell me the top five Power Five teams who have allowed the fewest number of plays this year. Top five Power Five teams who have allowed the fewest number of plays this year. And a hint, three of the five are in the Big 12. Let's play our theme music. All right, so I need five Power Five teams who have allowed the fewest number of plays this year. Let's start with the three that are in the Big 12. That's TCU, that's Iowa State, and Baylor are the three teams in the Big 12. And you probably got these other two teams, if you thought about it, as Wisconsin and Minnesota. I know a lot of times we talk about slow pace. Hey, what does that mean? These teams – you know, these teams all run a ton. They all play really, really slow. And they're all really good at getting 4 yards in a cloud of dust. They're keeping the chains moving. So few plays for the opposition. If you just put that in the math, you know, you do 50 plays versus 75 plays. You know, you can multiply your output for the opposing team by 50%. Because catches is important in DraftKings. You know, just counting stats just multiply when you're just adding plays. So something to think about. And I brought that up because these teams, Wisconsin, Baylor, Iowa State, TCU, they are all on today's slate. And speaking of the slate, let's get into the breakdown.
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
First game in the dock, we've got Missouri at Boston College. Missouri is a 2-point favorite, over under 59. Phil Yurkovich, the Boston College quarterback, hit the loss of him. I mean, that just hurts big time. Absolutely kills them. He was a really good player. He did stuff through the air, but more importantly, did stuff through his feet. Grossell's the backup. He's kind of like a Yurkovich light. Missouri's going to pass the ball a lot. Boston College is going to run the ball a lot. Boston College is actually top 10 in run percentage. And Missouri did not look good against Kentucky when Kentucky ran the ball. starting the Missouri side, not crazy interested here. They do have a Christian McCaffrey, and as I'm recording this, he got hurt tonight, like running back in Tyler Beatty. You usually, for whatever reason, you don't really see running backs getting, you know, looks in the passing game. I'm not really sure why. I think offenses could be more creative because it's a great damn play, as much in college football. And you look at the top teams. You look at Ohio State. You look at Clemson. You look at Alabama. And LSU had Burrow and company. These guys threw to the running backs all the time. So I really think a lot of offensive coordinators should really look to throw to the running back much more often and teach your quarterback, hey, if you get seven yards right there with a running back, just take it and go. No one does that better than Tom Brady. But anyways, Tyler Beatty's a great play for Missouri just because he's a dual threat running back. He catches passes. He runs it, and he runs at the goal line. That's what we want. Boston College has this guy named Pat Darwall, and he's kind of a bowling ball. I'll tell you what. Shout out to Pat. If Boston College is up in this game, he could do decent. He really could. But if they get behind, Darwall is not the pass catcher. He's just not built for that. So it's really dependent on like game flow. And with Grosso quarterback, that's really going to hurt guys like Flowers and some of the receivers out there. And again, this game's probably going to go kind of slower. So that's my interest in there. As far as lean on the game, just with a backup quarterback in Missouri giving up some run at Kentucky, I'm kind of conflicted there. So I'm going to stay away. Next one, Georgia at Vanderbilt. Georgia minus 35, over under 52.5. This is going to be a bloodbath, just an absolute straight-up bloodbath. Georgia is firing on all cylinders. Vanderbilt loses their top running back, not that it matters. As far as DFS, I'm not taking anyone on Georgia. They're probably building some team chemistry because they're throwing out five or six running backs every game. I mean, hell, 10, 11 wide receivers, tight ends get targets every week. This Brock Bowers guy, I saw a tweet that he recorded one of the top five, and he's a tight end for Georgia. He recorded one of the top five fastest speeds of the week, in all of, like, college football. I think it was week two or whenever he caught that long touchdown, but holy cow, that's pretty damn good for a tight end. So he's athletic. He's a guy Georgia will use. The problem with him is he could get 100 yards and a touchdown, but he might only get three catches. So you're kind of limited with his upside to his price. I'm going to take this Georgia minus 35 on this one. I don't see Vanderbilt scoring any points. And actually, I think Vanderbilt could score points for Georgia in the forms of interceptions, turnovers. I mean, their offense is that bad. And they just don't have the horses to sack up to Georgia. I'm going to take Georgia minus 35. This is just such a mismatch. And Georgia is shown to be so good this week. All right, let's take a pause and get into our big horse of the week. All right, my big horse this week are the Penn State fans. So we have a long year of COVID, no fans. Nothing better than seeing a complete packed house in the stadium, and no one does the whiteout, blackout, redout better than Penn State. You see it at other places, and sporadically you'll see different colors, whatever. And I've been to Penn State, the whiteout against Ohio State when they upset them. And literally everyone is wearing white. Everyone gets it. And it is awesome. And what Penn State does before the game, when everyone runs out, you guys should check out videos on Twitter if you haven't seen it. Their soundtrack is amazing. Absolutely amazing. The fireworks they shoot off, absolutely amazing. Everyone's got the pom-poms going in the student section, all white, and that place is literally rocking. If you're a recruit and you went to that whiteout game against Auburn, you're like, whoa, I want to be a part of this, and Penn State's going to be a lot higher on my list. So shout out to the Penn State fans. We all had a long year of COVID, no fans last year, and no one does it better than the Penn State fans on the whiteout. Kudos to those guys. You are our big horse of the week. Let's get back to the games here. We got LSU at Mississippi State. LSU is a 2.5 point favorite, over under 56. Boy, this is an interesting game. You're going to want to correlate your lineups here. All right. So this kind of depends on, it all depends on how LSU's defense plays against Mississippi State. If they drop eight guys back and Mississippi State just dumps down to the running backs all game, this game will slow down. It will slow down really quickly. If LSU decides to maybe rush four, blitz a few guys, only drop five or six, play man coverage, and Mississippi State starts, you know, completing these big long passes, this game is going to shoot out for 80, 90 points. LSU throws the seventh most in the country. Mississippi State throws more than anyone. So if Mississippi State starts scoring in a hurry, LSU with their fast pace, with their pass rate, with some of the studs they have that can just take it the distance, it will shoot out. So I would play the Mississippi State running backs and maybe lightly on the LSU wide receivers as kind of a correlation there. But if you really want a game stack, play the Mississippi State outside receivers, which are Heath and Polk, maybe the quarterback too, and Rodgers, and then throw that back on the other side with LSU's quarterback and some of their top guys. Because they're just going to chuck it around too, because they can't run the ball for nothing. So Max Johnson's their quarterback, of course. Kayshon Boutte, phenomenal player. They do have a different offensive coordinator this year, so I got to throw that one out there. The guy last year just did everything he can to get the guy in Busan. I don't blame him. He's a track star athlete in high school. Phenomenal athlete. Surefire NFL guy. Couple question marks with the wide receivers, though, in LSU. Trey Palmer didn't play that last week, and I've gotten literally no information. Don't know what the hell is going on there. This Deion Smith guy looks really good, another wide receiver. Jack Betch, he looks good, too. So you got all kinds of options on the LSU side, but like I said, it all depends on how LSU plays defense in this one, and they have a different defensive coordinator than the idiot they had last year, Bo Pelini, who, out of nowhere – first game of the week, everyone was shocked Mississippi State beat LSU, partly because Mr. Bo Pelini could have made the big dummy of the week last year for how he played defense against Mississippi State. As far as a line in this game, I mean, LSU minus 2.5, over under 56. Mississippi State's probably better than people give them credit for, but I'm going to stick away from this one. Again, I just don't have a feel for how this defensive coordinator from LSU, from the NFL, is going to attack this game. Next, we have Texas Tech at Texas. Texas minus 8, over under 61.5. Let's get this out of the way. Texas Tech hasn't played a damn soul. They played Houston. I think Holgerson's way overrated. Stephen F. Austin, they only won by 6 points. And then they played Florida International, who's not really good this year. So those are three complete cupcake games. I'm taking Texas minus 8 this week. I do trust the defense coordinator to get job done. I think Arkansas is actually a pretty good team. It was a tough matchup for them. And I think Texas kind of gave up a little bit in the fourth quarter, and I think that's making some of the advanced stats look a little off. I just don't trust Texas Tech and this coaching staff. And the three cupcake teams are kind of throwing everything off here. So with that said, the only guy in Texas Tech I'd play is Ukonma. The wide receiver, he has a crazy market share. He gets all kinds of targets. And then on Texas, on the other side, that running back, you know, Bijan Robinson, he's phenomenal. You can always play him. I don't care if it's Texas Tech. There's very few teams in the Big 12 you're going to say, hey, I'm not playing Bijan Robinson this week. He's a stud. He can catch the ball. He can take an 80-yard touchdown, you know, any possession. So you got to like him. Casey Thompson, the quarterback, he's decent. I'm kind of surprised Texas pulled Hudson Card real quick. I didn't think Card did that bad of a job, and I thought Card was actually pretty good against Louisiana. So it was kind of interesting. I guess you can play him. He somewhat rushes it. Interesting in the wide receivers, like Joshua Moore was expected to be the dude. I mean, he had at times flashed last year. But he was kind of benched last week. Now you have Jordan Whittington. He's been good. Xavier Worthy. And then a lot of rotation. So I think Texas offense is still trying to figure out, hey, what receivers are we going to have? They're going to step up. They think it's Whittington, but they're not sure. And like I said, I'm taking Texas minus 8. If Texas Tech would have played someone, I think this line would have been about 11 or so, but Texas, everyone just has fresh in their mind, oh, they just lost to Arkansas. Well, Arkansas might actually be pretty good. All right, moving on to the big dummy of the week. Let's play our music.
A lot of miscommunication there, and that one doesn't feel good, and it's embarrassing.
This is a fun one. The big dummy of the week is Miami, Florida, the U, the practice habits specifically for the linebackers. All right, hear me out. This team is 130 out of 130 in tackling rate per an ESPN stat. They tackle 63% of the time. Awful. Horrendous tackling. So I come across this video of a linebacker practice drill. They have one long line, and each player rotates, hitting a tackling dummy as they fall into a large gymnastic pad. What are we doing here, Miami? One coach is setting up the tackling dummy. Another coach is moving the gymnastics pad back to where it started. And a third coach is helping move the gymnastic pad back in line. You know who isn't doing anything? Every other damn player in line. You got eight guys in line. One guy can only go every 40 seconds because you got to put the gymnastic pad and the tackling dummy back in place. And you have three coaches standing there. I mean, that is inefficiency at its finest. I mean, maybe if you're a third grade football team where you want the kids to have fun the last practice of the year before the Turkey Bowl, yeah, sure, that's fine. You have a huge tackling issue. You wonder why your tackling sucks. I mean, my buddy Mike says lines are the death of productivity. Big dummy of the week, the least efficient drill I've ever seen in all of my life, courtesy of the Miami U linebackers. All right, let's get back into the games here. This is a fun one. I'm actually really excited about this game. SMU at TCU. This is intriguing. TCU minus 9, over under 64. TCU, let's start on the SMU side. They have a really good quarterback in Tanner Mordecai. He's a transfer from Oklahoma. This dude can sling it. He's a big-time recruit, transferred into SMU. And SMU brought all their receivers back, and they have some good receivers, Gray, Roberson, Rice. And then the tight end, Grant Calcaterra, comes with Mordecai from Oklahoma. So they have four legit players they can throw the ball to. And then on TCU side, they have arguably their two best defensive players, a defensive end and a secondary guy. They're out. They're hurt. And maybe that's part of the reason that California just threw for 300 yards on TCU. So I'm thinking SMU should be able to run the ball against TCU. However, TCU, yes, they do play slow. And they just figured out, hey, we're going to give the ball to Zach Evans. Turns out he's a big recruit. He's pretty good. And I love how coaches do this. You know, Zach Evans was benched the first game, you know, the first game of the first half. And, you know, he learned his lesson. He played didn't play, you know, we're going to sit him down a little bit. Well, guess what? Their opponent was Duquesne. Coaches do this shit all the time. They say, all right, we're really going to sit you out. We're going to suspend you for the first half or not doing this and that. And then they play a team like California. The game's close. They give the best player 20, 25 carries. We know what you're doing here. That's when the coach says, hey, listen, the guy did all the right things. He's done everything we've asked him to do. He's been an exemplary player. He's come and practiced the right way. Nah, bullshit. You just played a better team. And coaches just do that. They suspend their players for every reason against the bad team so they can play in line with a good team. Saban does this all the time. He gets it. Nonetheless, if Evans breaks away a couple long ones this game and speeds up the pace of the game, SMU will do well. If Evans just gets a bunch of five-yard carries and the quarterback, you know, Max Dugan, he's always playable. He's a rushing guy. If he gets 5 or 7 yards every play, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, this game could kind of, you know, that clock could churn a lot. But if Dugan starts airing it out to their, you know, listen, they have actually a pretty good wide receiver. They should probably give us the ball more. But Quentin Johnston, if he catches a couple long passes too, this game could churn. And all of a sudden you're looking at Tanner Mordecai and all these receivers from SMU having a day. So there's a chance this game could shoot out. I mean, this over under is 64. That's a lot for TCU. But I just gave you a few reasons why this game could shoot out. And their prices are pretty high on DraftKings, so it's really hard to kind of put a stack together. But I think it might be worth it. I think it might be worth it here, especially if TCU can hit a couple long ones. And SMU's defense is not good. So regardless of this game shoots out, TCU is going to score points. I am very confident in that. SMU could score points, but they're going to need more possessions to do it. So that's my thought in the game. TCU minus 9. Man, that seems like a lot of points. You know what? Give me SMU plus 8, plus 9 for all the reasons I said. I mean, they can have a backdoor cover. They keep throwing. They just have a lot of talent The quarterback's really good. They have a lot of talent with wideouts and a good tight end. And TCU's really struggled to generate pressure. And, you know, I watched some of that California game, and guys are running wide open. That's just so unlike TCU. But that kind of happens when – and they also lost guys in the NFL. But that happens when you're replacing guys in the NFL, and then your two best players are hurt. Harder to replace guys in college than it is in the NFL. All right, next game, of course, near and dear to me is Notre Dame, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, 6.5-point favorite, over earns 46.5. Let's talk about the matchup here. Wisconsin, you know what you're going to get. You absolutely know what you're going to get. Notre Dame, I'm not sure what Marcus Freeman's going to get. When he was at UC, you know, now that I look and see how Marcus Freeman's playing a lot, and he's playing a lot of multiple looks, a lot of pressure, a lot of aggressive style. UC had a lot of fickle – has a lot of fickle influence where it's very base defense focused. And you saw some of the Freeman twist on third down. So the question is, how does Freeman play base defense against Wisconsin? Because you're going to get your two tight ends. You're going to get your ground and pound, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see Notre Dame generate some three and outs more than you normally would, but you're also going to see Notre Dame give up a couple 30, 40-yard rushes. I just think that's the style that Freeman plays. It's kind of a boom or bust defensive style. So this game could speed up a little bit. And on the flip side, Notre Dame needs to complete passes against Wisconsin. Wisconsin is going to stack the box. They're not going to allow a lot of plays. But their secondary really isn't that good. But your receivers need to make plays. Your receivers need to make plays to beat Wisconsin. And Notre Dame's receivers really haven't shown that they can consistently make plays. They can, and they have at times, but other times they've looked terrible, drop passes, and they've been off on the same page, or Jack Cohn gets sacked because Notre Dame's on the third-string left tackle. So what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of unknowns. I'm staying away from this game from a betting side. And as far as the DFS side, also staying away. Wisconsin brings back Jalen Berger as a running back last week. Chim and Chaz Malusi kind of split work there. And at Wisconsin, we're only ever interested in the running back position. And Notre Dame, they really made him cheap. They're really trying to, you know, get us to play them. But I still just can't go there with how few of plays Notre Dame likely gets. And Notre Dame rotates a lot anyways. So I'm not going there. All right. Let's get into the doctor's pick. All right, the doctor. Whoo! 3-8 last week. Not a good week for the old doctor. He was on a roll for prior to that. I mean, he was, let's see, I have him at 8-1. So after 3-8, he is still in the green at 11-9. This week, he has 6 picks for us. That's a big 6. We've got Charlotte, a little Friday night action, -3 against Middle Tennessee. Charlotte -3 against Middle Tennessee. Liberty -6.5 against Syracuse. Toledo -4.5 at Ball State. Purdue -11 at home against the Illini of Illinois. UTSA +3.5 against Memphis. UCLA -5 at Stanford. So there you have it. Charlotte -3, Liberty -6.5, Toledo -4.5, Purdue -11, UTSA +3.5, UCLA -5, 6-pack for the doc. One game he didn't talk about, Boise State at Utah State. Boise is a 9-point favorite. The over-under is 70. This is all the makings of a shootout that could happen. This Utah State coach, he was at Arkansas State. And I don't know if you guys remember some of these games that Arkansas State played, like, last year, 2019, they played in absolute shootouts. I mean, absolute shootouts. One, they play fast. Two, they're pretty good at offense. Coaches, I'm pretty impressed by his offensive plays. And three, their defense is usually terrible, which turns into like 50-50 games, which is absolute thrillers. Now, Anderson is the head coach. He did bring in the defensive guy from Miami. He kind of, you know, dares teams to run the ball a little bit and gives up the slot. And on the flip side, Boise State, they bring in Avalos, the defensive guy at Oregon, and then they bring in this offensive coordinator from UC Davis. I don't think he's worth a hill of beans. I think he sucks. He does play at a super fast pace, though, like plays at a really fast pace. And he likes to throw the ball because for whatever reason, this guy can't call an offensive play to save his life. So we kind of have an interesting dynamic here. Boise State head coach Avalos says we need to run the ball more. their scheme and their plays, it just hasn't happened this year on the ground for Boise, even though it should here. So this game could absolutely shoot out, but I could see some reasons for the underhitting as well. Let's talk about the plays. Buckmeyer is the quarterback. He's good, but everything starts and stops at Boise State with Khalil Shakir. You're going to see this guy in the NFL. He's an absolute stud. He plays in the slot for them. Number two, he's going to get a couple carries. He is going to get peppered with the football. And if you're playing DFS this week, if you're not putting Khalil Shakir into your lineups, I hope I'm playing against you, because he's the first guy I'm putting in all my lineups this week. Running back, George Helani came back. He's the running back for Boise State. He was injured a few games, but he splits work there. He splits work. It's not a for sure like, oh, Helani's the guy. There's a chance he could be the guy here, but we just won't know that. Flip side, Utah State rotates quarterbacks, and that's something that Coach Anderson did at Arkansas. Matter of fact, he did it with the quarterback he brought over as a transfer to Utah State, Logan Bonner. He's one of the guys that rotates with them. And Utah State has some dynamic receivers, and I guess anyone looks dynamic in this offense. But Tompkins is a stud. Bowling is pretty good himself. Running backs will split some work. Tyler's the lead guy. Maybe interested in some of those guys, but I think Tompkins, head and shoulders, he just has a much higher target share than those other guys. And as far as game stacking, absolutely. I mean, this over-under is 70 for a reason. Both these teams play fast. Utah State's defense isn't that good. So, yeah, this could go over, but I don't think it's a lock to go over for some of the reasons I mentioned before. Next game, I'm going to go ahead and just call this as an under call for me at 57. Maybe you're guessing what game I'm thinking about. Texas A&M at Arkansas. Texas A&M is a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under is 57. This is going to be an all-out war on defense. I mean, both of these teams, they are going to play slow for one. Two, they run the shit out of the ball. Both of these teams, they love nothing better to run the ball. When they're up, Texas A&M, when they're up, they'll run when it's successful. Arkansas definitely will run with the dual quarterback there. And these are two really good coach teams, and they're two really good defenses. And they both play pretty slowly. So Texas A&M, they're really struggling on offense with since quarterback Haynes King went down. This backup, he stinks. He's not any good. They still have Isaiah Spiller in the backfield. They did lose Caleb Chapman, Anaya Smith, another wide receiver. He's probably not going to play. That's really going to hurt their offense. When you lose a guy like Anaya Smith in your deep threat and Caleb Chapman, and you already have a backup quarterback, that's going to hurt your offense. So they're going to have to run the ball to be successful. They haven't really run the ball yet this year. But they're going to need to run the ball here against Arkansas if they want any sign of success. Arkansas on the flip side, you have KJ Jefferson. He's a dual threat guy, offensive line coach. They run some really good offensive line plays. They put their guys in the right spots. They create really good blocking angles. They have a threat to run with the quarterback, and they have a decent running back in Traylon Smith, and they got Burks on the outside. He's a pretty good wide receiver. But on the flip side, Texas A&M has a ton of talent on defense. I mean, they have some freaking dudes. People probably don't realize this, but Texas A&M has recruited at a top five level for the last couple of years. Like, they are a loaded defense talent-wise. So that makes me to believe that Arkansas offense might struggle, not because they're a bad offense, but because Texas A&M defense is that good. So I like the under as a play, 57. DFS, all the talk this week is KJ Jefferson. He's 5.7K. He's priced really low for a guy that runs as much as he does from the quarterback position. Yes, you can absolutely play him. The only way he's not going to work is if you have two quarterbacks go absolutely bonkers. If you have two quarterbacks go bonkers and throw up like 30, 40 points, all of a sudden Jefferson doesn't look like a good play. But if Jefferson scores 15 to 20 points at 5.7K, now the other quarterbacks do much, Jefferson's going to be a great play. So if you're not playing Jefferson, make sure you play a guy with upside who can run the ball, who can maybe score 30 to 40 points. That's what I'm saying that. All right, let's get into our next segment, Anatomy of an Upset.
Appalachian State has stunned the college football world one of the greatest upsets in sports history.
This might be a shocker for most people. The common thought is, well, Alabama handled Florida no problem, right? Well, you actually couldn't be more wrong. Get this. Florida had a 91% win expectancy in this game per advanced stats against Alabama. They had a better yards per play, better expected points added per play, had more successful plays. Florida actually probably should have won this game. The only area they didn't perform well were special teams, and then they turned the ball over once, and that hurt. So when we look at Alabama, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, hold on a second. We know Florida's pretty good, but maybe Alabama isn't as invincible as we once thought, because post-game win expectancy, which is awesome, by the way, gave Florida a 91% chance to win this game. I saw that, and I was like, whoa, okay. You know, maybe we're in for something this year. And that brings me to my next point. You know, this is just such an off year because of the super seniors. You have teams like Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama. They're rotating guys, you know, through their program year in and year out. The sophomore, okay, you start to look good. Junior, you shine, boom, gone in the NFL. And next thing you know, they're, you know, getting in the next freshman, sophomore that looks good. Every other team in the country, most every team in the country, has these super seniors, these guys that got granted an additional year of COVID. So these guys are literally like 22 and 23 years old. That's a whole other year getting bigger, faster, stronger, and they already know the playbook. Like some of these MAC schools have like 90% returning production of guys. You're talking all of a sudden you have 22, 23-year-old guys playing against 18, 19-year-olds at times. So there's a big discrepancy in age of these guys all of a sudden because of the COVID rule. So I think that's something to watch as the year goes on, is how the schools that put a lot of guys in the draft, how they compare to some of the other schools that brought guys back, especially super seniors, to play another year that are like 22 and 23 years old. So it actually could make for a really fun college football year. But just a thought there, something to watch. Next game, we have Louisville at Florida State. The Ville is a 2-point favorite, the over under 62.5. I'll tell you what, if Florida State doesn't win this game, we have serious issues because this is a great matchup for them. Louisville dares teams to run the ball. They don't want to give up the big play. Florida State likes they can't throw because they don't have good receivers and something's just not working there. They can run the ball in Louisville. I know they can. Louisville gives up the run. All right. And on the flip side, Florida State's been getting killed with outside wide receivers. Their cornerbacks are just getting roasted. You know what Louisville sucks at? Throwing the ball to outside wide receivers. They're rotating the wide receivers in and out, trying to find that next Des Fitzpatrick, that next Tutu Atwell. Well, guess what? They just don't have him. He's just not on the roster this year. So this is a great, great matchup for Florida State. But still, I still don't trust them enough to take FSU +2 in this game. This is a game that could shoot out as well. Louisville, obviously you play Malik Cunningham, crazy upside with his legs. The hard part about him is who do you pair him with? You know, Louisville's still rotating and playing wide receiver roulette out there. Really, really hard to pick a guy. Maybe I take Huggins Bruce, the outside wide receiver. It's a good matchup for him. But, again, is he that talented? I don't know. We're going to find out. Florida State side, this could be a matchup for Corbin here. Now, they still like to rotate running backs. But if Corbin and that offense can't get it done in this game against Louisville at home, after Louisville has a big emotional win on national TV, you're in for a long year, Florida State. Let me tell you right now. Staying away from that game betting-wise. All right, next one, Clemson at North Carolina State. Clemson -9, over-unders 47. Shout-out to Dabo here. Not a big Dabo guy, but he did stick up for his guys after the offensive dud. He came out and said, well, you know, we played Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech threw absolutely everything we hadn't seen before against us on offense. Well, here's the problem with that, Dabo. You had a 2.5-hour halftime break because of the lightning delay. I do say give you credit for taking the blame for your guys just sucking and maybe your offensive line just not happening. Again, They lost a lot of guys in the NFL. We were just talking about this. So it's good for him sticking up for those guys. The problem with that is if they come out and lay another offensive dud against a pretty good NC State defense, pretty good for the ACC, all of a sudden you're like, okay, you know, like we can't just take all the blame as coaches anymore. We have some personnel issues on our offense, which I believe Clemson does. So as far as DFS, I'm not taking anyone in this game. No chance. Clemson's defense is still phenomenal. So I'm actually, my play is going to be on the under 47. I'm just in just hope and pray that there's no defensive touchdowns and there's no turnovers for short fields, because Clemson's defense is going to hold NC State under 10 or 14 points. I feel pretty good about that. I just need NC State's defense to hold in there against Clemson, who just hasn't looked good this year on offense. I mean, has not looked good. Even when they played a terrible team, I think the second week of the year, they only put up like 500 yards of offense. They just haven't looked good. So that's the play for me, under 47. Let's take a pause here and get into our coach of the week.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Coach of the week, Kansas State head coach Chris Klieman. Congratulations, you are a coach of the week. You know, a few people are seeing what this guy has done at Kansas State. He took a program that, I mean, they weren't exactly firing on all cylinders. He started off with 3-0 with no doubt wins against Stanford and Nevada. Nevada has an NFL quarterback. Stanford goes out and waxes USC. I watched the Kansas State-Stanford game. I left that game thinking Stanford was absolutely terrible. Well, maybe it turns out Kansas State is pretty good. And he beat Nevada with a backup QB. This is the case in point when you're hiring coaches, success begets success. If you can succeed at FCS level, consistently win, chances are you can probably do it in the FBS level. And this guy was awesome at North Dakota State. He built a powerhouse out there. He's beaten Oklahoma 2 years in a row. He beat Iowa State in 2019 as a dog. And, hey, they're going to lose some games, Kansas State, but who knows what the Big 12 season holds. But let's shout out a couple quality wins for Kansas State, especially with their backup quarterback against the Nevada team that does have an NFL quarterback and one with a better group of five teams. Shout out Chris Klieman. You are our coach of the week. All right, last two games here. We got Iowa State at Baylor. Iowa State is a 7-point favorite. The under is 47. Both teams, as we recall in our trivia question, they made the fewest plays allowed stat. I probably should bet the under here now that I think about it. You know what? I am under 47. If I'm taking the under in Clemson, NC State, I'm going to take the under in Iowa State, Baylor. These teams love to run the ball. Baylor really loves to run the ball. They are 13th. In the country, run play percentage, Iowa State's actually more of a pass-heavy team. Baylor really hasn't played anyone this year. This actually could be a sneaky game for Breece Hall. It really could. This could be one of those, like, hey, we're going to give our best player 30 carries, and those carries are going to add up. And then next thing you know, if he only gets, you know, 80 yards and 29 carries, but that 30th carry is another 80-yarder, boom, he's hitting value right then and there. Baylor side, I'm not that interested in anyone. Iowa State, man, maybe Xavier Hutchinson, the wide receiver, tall guy, more of a possession wide receiver, not much of a breakaway threat. Good player, not much of a breakaway threat. And then Breece Hall might be my guy. And I really think that Iowa State, with how slow they're playing, you know, we used to look at Brock Purdy as like, hey, there's a DFS guy we can, you know, kind of rely on week in, week out, a quarterback, dual threat. With how slow Iowa State's playing, it's just not happening for him. So going to punt on Brock, and Breece would be my guy this week. And he might be a little contrarian play. And I am on the under 47 for this game. Next game, Rutgers at Michigan. I might want to keep the under train going. This is over under is 49. I'm actually not sure if Rutgers is going to score a point against Michigan. Maybe they will. Rutgers offense has some serious issues right now. I really had better hopes for them. I'm taking the under as a 49. It's official play there. Two teams that, again, are super slow. Michigan runs the ball at the third highest rate in the country. Third highest. There are three service academies that run the option. So I don't know which service academy, I'm guessing Air Force, that they pass the ball Air Force passes the ball more than Michigan. Let's put it that way. That's how much they freaking run the ball. And Rutgers is 23rd in run play percentage. So this should be a slow game. Michigan will be successful. Shiano's had issues in the run against the pass. It's kind of been his bugaboo. He's better against teams that try to air it out. I do think Michigan wins. I think they win easy. And I don't think Rutgers does much in offense. This new Michigan coordinator, he's pretty sound defensively. And Rutgers, if they can't score against the first couple opponents they play at the beginning of the year, you're not going to score at Michigan when your back's against the line. And then shout out to Blake Corum, Michigan running back. Dude is freaking good. I mean, he is an NFL player. He can catch passes when needed. Not that he does a ton, but he makes guys miss in the regular, and I really like him. And he is absolutely a play for DFS, and he has big-time upside. Haskins as well. All right, let's review any picks here. Bear with me 1 second. I took a couple extra on the pod. Last week, I went 2-2. I am 6-4 in the year. We got hot on the unders here late. We took four unders, so we were big-time unders with Texas A&M, Arkansas under, Clemson, NC State under, Iowa State, Baylor under, Rutgers, Michigan, all under. So we're looking for a lot of unders this week. And then I took SMU plus 9, Texas minus 8, and Georgia 35 points. It's a lot to give them, but Vanderbilt's going to throw a couple pick sixes and we'll be on our way, so we hope. So that is actually 7 picks there, and 4 of them are unders. As Joe has this, the Doc has the 6-pack of the week, and we talked about that above. All right, fun lovers, let's work our way out of the podcast with our words of wisdom. All right, words of wisdom this week. Just a thought in college football. You know, a lot of people are looking and saying, man, that stadium's kind of empty. Guess what? You know, these colleges got a little greedy. They've priced these tickets pretty high. I mean, Ohio State's only had 75,000 for a couple of their games, but you look at the price of Ohio State tickets, they're playing Akron this week. And if you want to bring a family of four to the game, after tickets, after parking, after walking a mile, after tailgate, after gas, after sitting in traffic, you're looking at $400 or $500 to watch a 50-0 game. I think everyone after the COVID pandemic is like, yo, this watching it on my couch deal, and I don't have to watch a blowout. I can watch 5 or 6 other games. I mean, college football is in a great spot. The TV numbers are absolutely through the roof. And I just think that I'm almost kind of happy that fans aren't coming to the games, because you know what? The only way they're going to lower ticket prices so more people can experience the greatness of college football is if less people show up to the games. And it'll also incentivize, stadiums and teams to make more of a fan experience at the game. Because right now you get a lot of, oh, let's take a timeout and let's congratulate so-and-so for donating $100,000 to the university. Everyone stand up and clap. Great. Well and good. But that's not going to get the 10-year-old to enjoy the football game. So I think you're going to see, if attendance continues to decline, it's still fine. Football revenue through the TV contracts, you know, dominates all, but I hope this forces teams to lower ticket prices, one, and then two, really work on their in-game experience, especially in college football where the commercial breaks are crazy long. All right, guys, that wraps it up. Thanks for tuning in this week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Rating review, always appreciated, and I love feedback. News is going to impact these initial thoughts, guys. So my details breakdowns are at gupscorner.com. This is just a first look at it. And to look at a couple bets there. I got 7 of them on the docket this week. All right, fun lovers. Until next time, make some memories.